So my name is Sophie Pittman. I'm a historian here at Cambridge working on a PhD on clothing in 16th and 17th century London. And I also convene the Things seminar series here at CRASH. So there's obviously lots of overlap and interest between what's going on at this conference and what we've been doing at the Things seminar series over this past year and indeed the last few years. I'm delighted to be chairing this first session of the conference, and I hope and I'm sure that these three talks will open up our discussions and really set the tone for the conference ahead, exploring objects in cultural, temporal, and geographical transitions. In these three papers, our speakers will address the changing significances of traditional objects within national cultural contexts, and will raise issues surrounding notions of heritage, state building, globalization, and collecting. I'll introduce each speaker before their 20-minute paper, and we intend to keep to strict time in order to make sure we have plenty of opportunity for questions at the end of the session. So please save your questions for the speakers for the joint discussion at the end. So after the three papers have been presented, I'll ask the speakers to sit here at the front, and we'll open it up for discussion. And you're very welcome, as Alexei mentioned, to either direct your question to a speaker or to try to think about connections or even disjunctures between the talks. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Amal Sachedina. Amal is the Aga Khan Visiting Professor in Islamic Humanities at Brown University. She has a doctorate in sociocultural anthropology and Middle East studies from the University of California, Berkeley, as well as an MPhil in Islamic art and archaeology from Oxford. She's been a recipient of a number of fellowships, including a Fulbright and a Mellon Fellowship, which was held at the American Museum of Natural History, and she served as a research consultant for World Heritage Advisory Bodies. Today, she will speak on More Coffee, Anyone? The Coffee Pot as an Object of Reform and Restoration in the Sultanate of Oman. So, welcome.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I would like to extend a special thanks to Dr. Alexei Baker for organizing and inviting all of us to this incredibly productive conference. So I'll just start right away, and I apologize, I will be reading my paper. Since its inception as a nation state from 1970 onwards, Oman's expanding heritage industry and market for crafts and sites, exemplified by the boom in museums, exhibitions, cultural festivals, and the restoration of more than 100 forts, castles, and citadels, affects a territorially bound nation state. Material forms ranging from old mosques and Sharia manuscripts to restored forts now museumified, and national symbols such as the coffee pot or dalla, and the dagger or the khanjar, saturate the landscape and become part of a public visual memorialization of the past. In public spaces and the circulation of media, these ubiquitous tangible forms provide the context within which the very foundations of the nation take place. Yet the Heritage Project in modern Oman has also reconfigured the public domains of history and Islam as seemingly separate and autonomous, thus erasing any awareness of the socio-political and ethical relationships that once characterized Ibadi Islamic rule, from 1913 to 1958 in the region. The result is the transformation of what once was a Sharia sociality through practices of progressive historicity. This paper is set within the paradoxes and ambiguities unleashed by the contestations of two very different forms of governance. The last Ibadi Imamate from 1913 to 1957 of the Omani region was established within a tribally organized society with its administrative capital in the city of Nizwa in the interior. It was intimately linked to the broader framework of the Ummah, a theologically invoked space that enabled Muslims to embody Ibadi Sharia as the practical juridical system by which they were governed and the daily moral and ethical mores they inhabited. Authority was undergirded by an ethical form of life premised on the Quran and the Sunnah, or the ways of the Prophet and his companions, in accordance with ideas about the exemplarity as interpreted by histories of the Ibadi school. This state of affairs was in direct opposition to that which prevailed over the coastal areas of Oman, where monarchical dynastic rulers, the Al Said Sultanate, had gradually ceded power to British imperial sovereignty. The fall of the Imamate under British air bombardment and the Sultanate's Anglo-Omani forces produced the boundaries of a new political geography defined by the demands of modern state building and its comprehensive oil-producing infrastructure. The establishment of modern nation state building from 1970 onwards has involved the work of heritage as a particular modality of history making that has forcibly transformed the terrain from one inhabited by a Sharia sociality and a theological sense of time to the progressive linearity that defines a nation space, a national space. The material forms and aesthetic qualities of historical artifacts, objects, and sites whose form and function once embedded them as integral elements in Ibadi community sociability and sense of history now assume an iterable mode of representation that makes them simultaneously significant and mundane. In exploring the shifts in how different ways of reasoning the past are conceived and inhabited as competing life worlds of meaning, certain objects may become key entry points towards examining the tensions between the perpetuation and alteration of time itself. Objects become what Kathleen Stewart describes as, in quotes, lines of action, that are not merely materially there, but bring about potential actions and orientations in enabling new ways of perceiving space, time, and history. The dalla, or the traditional coffee pot, for example, comes to embody the intimate histories gathered around the manner it continues to be put to quotidian use. Over the course of the 20th century, larger socio-political and ethical processes have been at work in transforming the embodied ways in which the material qualities of the dalla have been experienced and acquired salience as part of daily life. The changing modes in which the dalla's material qualities have been rendered significant are metonymic for broader configurations of politics and historiography. These configurations have pedagogically structured and transmitted memory in turn, made visible new perceptual capacities and introduced new sensorial ways of experiencing the significance of the dalla. In taking a closer look at changes in the ways that the dalla becomes relevant, I pose two questions. Over the course of the 20th century, what specific conceptions of history, sovereignty, and moral order emerged through actual uses of the dalla? And what specific forms of practical and perceptual self-awareness come to take root from these practices as the past is recalled and the present and future are reordered accordingly? Based on my ethnographic fieldwork in Muscat and Nizwa in 2010 and 2011, I seek to draw attention to how the dalla materializes and expresses multiple modes of historical consciousness. During the Imamate, according to many who had lived through the 40s and 50s, Nizwa was a community that allocated its daily activities in accordance with the temporal rhythms of the five daily prayers. As many members of long-standing families recalled, this was a time when the sabla played an integral role in structuring people's everyday routines. Nasir, the elderly proprietor of the Nizwa Fort's gift shop, informed me that the sabla was a widespread practice where neighbors, perhaps from about five houses or so, would sit together in one place, making up a sabla. They would sit and chat in the evenings, exchanging news on the latest events in the area, mediate quarrels between neighbors, or affect consultations about a bad crop or a political meeting to reform the outlying region. This was the basic aim of the sabla. Or, as he further elaborated, perhaps someone died and there was a funeral. People from the Hara, or the quarters, and neighboring areas would sit in the sabla after this person's death and offer condolences to the bereaved. In translation, then, the term sabla means both place, where friends, kin, and neighbors gathered for the exchange of news, and the act of talking itself. Before the Nahda, that is before 1970, when Oman began the process of modernization, he continued, people who had no work or learning to do would gather at a sabla in the mornings after Fajr or dawn prayer and partake of the daily social rituals of coffee and dates and breakfast together. Sometimes they would go off before early afternoon prayer or dhuhr prayer to engage in agriculture or trade nearby. Other times, each person would bring a craft or something to work on with their hands while chatting as a means of increasing their income. If there was any emergency in the community, these people were available. As a meeting place, the sabla could exist anywhere, under a shady tree, a space under a makeshift shelter made of palm branches, or a small chamber. Coffee always figured prominently into past descriptions of neighbor and kinship bonds as part of forging social relationships that generated a residential quarter or a hara. For example, this is in quotations, the neighbors brought coffee to the sabla in the mornings, end of quotation, or there was always a dalla for coffee warming in the corner of the sabla, or we just brought a little coffee and some dates with us to the sabla, or in the evenings we would make the rounds of coffee. As Mandana Limbert has lucidly described, coffee and dates in Oman have historically specific assumptions embedded in their use and have formed intimate roles in shaping people's relationship with each other. This is also considered to be an intrinsic part of legal moral duties, and a well-known prophetic hadith or saying was often quoted to me in Nizwa in this regard. In quotations, "He who believes in God and the last day must honor his guest." In such a context, the resemblance or iconism of the dalla as a serving utensil instigated the act of pouring coffee, an action which was and still is a necessary part towards sedimenting ties of obligation and reciprocity. In other words, the dalla and what it was socially conceived as was embedded in people's material interactions, demands, and dynamics with each other. In a Mawsian sense, the dalla was an extension of the giver's personality and the lubricant that enabled the cultivation of socio-moral relationships. These relationships were considered inseparable from the material exchange of dates and coffee. Those who did not do the kahwa, that is, the social act of doing coffee with their guests, with at the very least dates and coffee, were often told as that they were not honoring them, even if they offered them a sumptuous repast overall. It was within such a set of perceptual conditions that history assumed sensorial and practical dimensions that contributed to a distinctly Islamic form of sociability. A number of people from prominent ulama or religious scholarly families mentioned the importance of the sabla as a forum of study and social intercourse between the imam, or the religious and political leader of the community, the religious scholars of the ulama, and the more advanced students of fiqh or jurisprudence after a maghrib or evening prayer. Books, however, were not restricted to the scholarly. A number of men in Nizwa from different walks of life, ranging from shopkeepers to government administrators and school teachers, recalled that despite the fact that many people, even after 1970, who did not know how to read and write, were still well aware of the historical works of such great scholars as Nuruddin As-Salmi's and his work Tuhfat al-Ayan or Isqawi's Kashf al-Gumma on Oman, among others. In the evenings, when people were sitting in the sabla, someone, perhaps an alim or religious scholar from the neighborhood, would usually bring a book to read, to recite out loud, or to recount its words from his own memories. The most popular works were those filled with stories and histories of the prophets, the imams, and the righteous, such as the two mentioned above. The scholar or reader would sit at the sadr or place of honor, reflecting and reproducing a social hierarchy based on learning, age, influence, and social status, which varied according to occasion and circumstance. A hearth made of stones or sand with coals piled on was usually located to the side of the room, where a fire kept the ceramic or copper dalla hot, keeping the coffee warm for a while. It would then customarily be poured and distributed first to those of highest rank and then to the lower ranks by young boys. Both As-Salmi's Tuhfat al-Ayan and Isqawi's Kashf al-Gumma explicitly mention their audience as listeners. The Kashf al-Gumma, written in the 18th century, which was recalled by many as a popular work that was often read out loud in the past, is generally considered the oldest of the three main historical works of Oman's late history. In the introduction, Isqawi lays out the reasons for his writing as, "I have noticed that most of the people of our time have forgotten the origin of their honorable doctrine, and they have become uninterested in reading books written by former generations. In including information on the Ibadi Imams and their doctrine, I have given it a superficial disguise as stories and historical accounts, whilst inwardly it relates to the chosen sect because people will not listen to the actual historical tradition, but are more desirous of hearing legendary stories. So I have bent myself to please them so that they may listen and concentrate their attention in reading it with a pure heart, so that they may know the fundamentals of the sect and acknowledge the people of truth in a true manner. Through recasting the listener's thought into the structural mode of historically edifying tales, Iskavi was preaching and guiding on the basis of criteria oriented towards the fulfillment of God's will, as understood by an Ibadi interpretation of the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet. In becoming ethical guidelines, such acts of recollection were vested in the recitation of the life stories of the Imams, their words and deeds, driving and counseling the listener towards correct courses of action. In navigating doctrine, these written accounts were more than mere conduits of information. Public reading, which was widespread as an integral part of the Sabla, actively contributed towards modes of heightened awareness where the self became the object of scrutiny and assessment. Through inspiring fear, revulsion, or pious passion among a myriad of other emotions, histories in turn became part of a pedagogic process whereby their absorption into the self became the generative basis for deepening and honing the inclination towards pious disposition in everyday life. In other words, such relations to the past were not simply referential or communicative, but were the doctrinal extension of a history delineated by the life of the Prophet and the two caliphs after him, the Prophet and to a lesser extent Abu Bakr and Umar, who were considered the exemplars for the constitution of the golden age that provided the substrate for Ibadi doctrinal tradition and practices of Islamic virtue. The Sabla, therefore, had a fundamental ethical dimension in acting as a means towards cultivating habits of moral health and Islamic virtue. Coffee and dates were fundamentally imbricated in the set of practices of sociality through which a certain ethical, political reasoning emerged. This was a public life where embodied histories gave rise to a certain commonplace type of reasoning and set of sensibilities, memories, aspirations, and anxieties, that in turn shaped commitments and determined action within the religio-political framework of the Ibadi sectarian tradition. The past as the embodiment of an ethical-political world was therefore not conceived as symbolic, but rather as causative in undergirding institutional power and disciplinary practices, where merit in the form of piety in commanding right and forbidding wrong became institutionalized in developing normative modalities of action for proper daily guidance in the interpretation and deployment of jurisprudence in everyday administration. History premised on an exemplary function would depend on a continuity of the space of experience, whereby expectations would remain stable over long periods of time and bring nothing new. This continuity of experience was undergirded by the assumption of a divinely revealed standard of behavior based on the prescriptive demands of the Quran and the prophetic Sunnah. The future itself was therefore defined by the exemplary character of the Prophet and the rightful successors as articulated by Ibadi doctrine. It would only be in the Nahda period, the period of Oman's socio-economic modernization as a nation state, from 1970 onwards, the Dalla would disarticulate itself in order to stand alone as the abstract national symbol for Oman's valuation of hospitality, communal obligation, and honor to the guest. In short, the thrust of transforming the Dalla into an object of heritage has involved the work of purification in making separations between the material form of the Dalla and the concrete ties and relationships that once bound it to the world. In becoming symbolic of a series of transcendental qualities, it would lose that integral relationship that defined its constitutive material basis to induce the ties that bind and its ensuing socially binding debt. The nation-building project that has defined Oman's modernity from 1970 onwards has recalibrated the role of history to a teleological framework oriented towards progress. In assuming a modernist conception of time, the past and future are no longer based on continuity, but on a widening difference. Today, the future is widely assumed to bring about fundamentally new situations that past experiences cannot materially co-opt, since it contains elements that are irreducibly different. To rely on the exemplars of the past would be to, in quotes, lag behind, end quote, since it would signify the refusal to acknowledge the notion of change as fundamental differences accumulate over time towards creating a transformed future. The material property of visibility now becomes crucial to the organization of a new perceptual regime that becomes formative of a national consciousness. Abstracted from their socially binding relationships, kinship obligations, and customary ties, the Dalla, among other objects, are now arranged and organized in accordance to states' institutional settings and emerging socioeconomic communities of practice. As material witnesses to something very real, in quotations, they carve out a landscape, draw out historical vision, and produce a political geographical unit through circulating discursive practices such as lavishly photographed official publications, school textbooks, museum exhibits, and handicraft ornaments. Urban landscapes are defined and made substantive through the repetition of certain standardized traditional motifs through street montages, as you see here, and citywide murals. As part of a secular history grounded in the land, God is eliminated from the public scene and modern virtues are fostered as part of a normalizing moral force directed towards good citizenship for an entire population. These objects and sites, as visual modes of representation, become an iterable, standardized vocabulary that transforms history in concept and practice, thereby opening up new social and political possibilities of being. In assuming museal values, they are transformed into the indexical traces of a series of causal processes that structure an alternative sense of history and tradition. Placed within a different grammar of history, the ways in which the emergent citizen encounters and experiences such new vocabulary as civilization, culture, progress, are through an engagement with highly orchestrated object worlds that materialize that which is considered quintessentially Omani as a unitary nationality with its signal virtues. The relationship now assumes one of signification, wherein the object indexes a relationship with the past, transmitting high ideals and virtues such as social affinity, mutual respect, and innovation against the backdrop of Omani nation building. A moral tradition of civic virtues and principles are cultivated that articulate closely with the daily rhythms demanded of the social and political conditions brought about by the modern state apparatus. The Sabla, like the Dalla and other objects, architectures and sites, are tethered to a set of civic virtues that do not merely serve as an abstract system of values, but ground practical engagements of living modernity. The very materiality of these semiotic forms and their arrangements come to be considered as a binding necessary link to qualities that mobilizes Thorat or heritage as part of the logic and experience of recalling the past in ways that facilitate a modern envisioning of present and future. For example, in the exhibit Dorat al-Hayat, or the Cycle of Life at the Museum of Omani Heritage or the Omani Museum in Muscat, hospitality rituals are part of everyday traditional life, as exemplified by three men kneeling on a locally woven carpet, a palm woven shath, which is used to cover food, and on the side by another palm woven mat, slippers are set by a boiling kettle with coffee in it waiting to be poured. A large panel in the background reads, "The hospitality of the Omani people is legendary. However, in the past, it was also essential for survival. Generosity and mutual responsibility has evolved over centuries and was necessary as part of a survival strategy in the harsh, natural, and tribal environment of the Arabian Peninsula." This exhibit, like others in the Sultanate, are situated in the ethnographic present, where dynamics of change are not acknowledged, nor is a historical context given. High ideals such as hospitality, generosity, mutual responsibility become substantially linked to a territorial polity, part of an imaginary community, which despite transformations and changes amid across space and time, still stand as an enduring substratum that outlasts finite biological life. This organic power appears to stem from indelible linkages to the land. Tradition in this context becomes a process whereby taming the land and domesticating it becomes part of a dynamism of spontaneous and purposive becoming. Man's ability to master his environment generates the ability for him to become a being who is able to shape his natural self as well as his external conditions. In this sense, its basic meaning would be metaphorically resonant with that of cultivating and tilling the soil, resulting in the ethical and intellectual development of mind or soul. In defining the citizen, these narratives focus on the generation of self who embrace tradition through the cultivation of a certain set of normative values developed by one's forebears through their purposive work and practices on land and sea, transcending their concrete circumstances. The culmination of this notion of laboring the land, material artifacts, settlements, and sites come to be reevaluated into a mighty reservoir of spiritual principles that stretches from the ancient past to the present day. To engage with Asabla today with its intrinsic relationship to the exchange of coffee and dates is to immerse oneself in an ethos linked to a brand of national distinctiveness and authenticity. The Asabla has now become tethered with spaces that cultivate a modern Omani citizenry. Thank you.